Log Talk Radio.
Right field, and he dives! He's got it! Cutter pitch!
Baseball fans, and welcome to a podcast to be named later. I am your host, Chris Mitchell. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us. And we're doing our 30 teams, the MLB 2016 wraparound podcast here today. We started doing this series. I'm going to try to do all 30 teams before opening day. It's a little bit of an ostentatious attempt. Maybe it's a little bit too ambitious, but I'm hoping to be able to get 30 teams done before opening day. And I can't do a podcast every single day. So we'll see how it does. I think we have plenty of time to do it, but nonetheless, we're doing our attempts. We started with the Baltimore Orioles and Lenny Melnick, and you can find that over at minorleagueball.com, or you can go over to my Twitter feed at CJMitch73 if you want to find the link for that one. We covered the Orioles from top to bottom. And today we're going to be talking with Ben Nicholson-Smith from sportsca.net. He covers the Toronto Blue Jays, and we've had him on the podcast in previous years, and he's going to be talking with us about the Jays. We're going to review 2015. Then we're going to look at the offseason, what the Jays have been doing so far, what they have done or what they haven't done, what needs they've filled, what needs maybe they still need to fill. Can they achieve those things? Can they fill those needs? And then, of course, we'll predict ahead and try to preview what we could possibly expect from 2016 from the Toronto Blue Jays. And looking back at 2015, I don't think anyone is surprised or stunned by what the Jays were able to do. But I don't think we assumed that they were the best team in the American League East, which it turns out they were. I don't think we assumed that they were very much a World Series contender, which they very much were. So by all means, 2015 was a very successful season for the Jays. Let's get into it right now with Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, thanks a lot for coming back on with us. Great to have you on board today, and great to be talking some Blue Jays baseball with you.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Looking forward to talking some Blue Jays baseball as well.
And as I mentioned a little bit there in the opening, we expected, I think, a lot from the Blue Jays, but we saw them as an offensive team, which they definitely satisfied those criteria. They were a monster when it came to offense. Going into the season, I think the concern was, what are they going to be able to do with the rotation? Their bullpen looked like it was going to be extremely young with Asuna eventually being the closer and really having a phenomenal season. But going into 2015, what kind of expectations do you think were realistic, and what kind of expectation did you have for them? Was it different than maybe the standard media, and what did you see maybe that the rest of us out here in the national world maybe didn't see?
Well, going into the season last year, I picked them as a wild card team. And I think that reflects probably a common perception about the Blue Jays, which was that they were a good team, but they were a team with flaws. And particularly, those flaws were on the pitching side, like you said, where you had a rotation that didn't necessarily have a clear-cut ace after losing Marcus Stroman to an ACL injury early in spring training. And you had a bullpen with a lot of question marks, too. So even though we knew they were going to hit, I think there were enough questions on the pitching side that a lot of people had them outside of the playoffs, and I undersold them a little bit by picking them for a wild card when in reality they went on to win the division title.
Yeah, and the AL East wasn't the strongest division, though I do think a lot of people were a little bit overly critical. I don't think the AL East was a terrible division, and when you saw how strong the Red Sox finished, even though they ended up in last place in the division, I think that says that the AL East, again, coming in, some people thought maybe it was the worst division in baseball. At the end of the year, I don't think it was all that bad at all. So not only did the Jays have a very nice season, but I think their competition was stronger than maybe some people would give them credit to be. What do you think was the key to with them able to accomplish what they did in 2015?
For me, it comes back to the bats. And I think that anytime you have Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion, you're probably going to have a good offense. And then the addition of Josh Donaldson really took the offense to another level. You throw in guys like Russell Martin, Chris Colabello, who had a breakout year really out of nowhere. Kevin Pillar had a breakout season that was largely defensive, but for a center fielder, he wasn't a bad hitter either. So you combine that with some even lesser known contributors like a Devin Travis. And really this offense was overpowering, by far the best offense in Major League Baseball, scoring tons of runs, nearly 900 runs scored in the course of the season. And basically, they were in every game as a result. When you can score 10 runs easily, and that's something they did more than a dozen times in 2015, then you're just never out of any game. And as a result, the Blue Jays made a lot of comebacks. They had a lot of blowout wins where they were able to rest their pitching staff. And to me, that offense is the core of that 2015 team, and it's going to have to be the driving force behind a successful 2016 Blue Jays team.
Yeah, going into the season, I thought the Russell Martin contract, while I thought he was a good player, I thought that was an intriguing one, to give him that kind of money as a catcher. But he had a fantastic season. So regardless of my overall opinions, nonetheless, he had a good season, a better than good season. And then you hear some analysts talk about his pitch framing and his defense and the way he handles a rotation and everything. What did you get? What was the impact of Russell Martin? And was he not only a good value, but was he a steal with the kind of contract you ended up giving him?
I think he's more of a good value than a steal. And I think that maybe his previous contract with the Pirates, or even dating back before that to his deal with the Yankees, those might have been closer to steals. At $82 million, the Blue Jays paid him frontline catcher money. I think that there's no question in my mind that he did pretty well for himself with that contract. But at the same time, I think it is good value because you're getting a player who's very well-rounded. He's a very good offensive player, not only in terms of on-base percentage, but he's a legitimate power threat as well. And we saw that in 2015 at Rogers Center in particular, where he was really able to drive the ball, generate a lot of power, and contribute offensively in that way too. But like you said, he is someone who can generate a lot of value on defense. He is very capable at throwing out runners, and by extension, that deters opposing teams from trying to run on him. And you also have the pitch framing. So you add all of that up, you get a really good catcher, a well-rounded catcher who's able to contribute in just about every facet of the game. So for $82 million over the course of 5 years, to me, that's a good value for the Blue Jays. It's a good contract for Martin, and it's certainly one that the Blue Jays are going to be relying on big time the next few seasons.
And we're definitely going to preview 2016, and this player is a guy that I think will be an interesting one to get into, and we'll get into that in a moment. But I do want to talk about his 2015 as well, because I think 2015 will be very telling about what we're going to be talking about here in a moment when it comes to looking ahead to 2016. And that's Aaron Sanchez. Guy's got a great arm. No one would ever disagree with that. But whether he can command it, whether he can be a starter, whether he can be a reliever or not, those are very much up-in-the-air questions. I think we had those questions in going into 2015, and I think the same questions exist now. What did you see from him in 2015, both as a starter and both as a reliever? And then, of course, in a few minutes, we'll get into what his role may be and how this may foreshadow what he's going to do this year. But what did you see from him in 2015 in both of those different roles?
Well, as a starter, I saw potential, and it's hard not to when you have a really tall guy who's throwing really hard and generating all kinds of ground balls. The potential is there. There's no question about it. And there are times when he can generate swings and misses with his curveball as well. But really, he was inconsistent in the starting rotation. And I think that when you look at the amount of batters he was walking, it had to be a concern for the Blue Jays. That's not something that they like to see. Really, no team likes to see their starting pitchers walking guys. And so the command was a problem for Sanchez out of the rotation. He had trouble retiring left-handed batters in the rotation. And I didn't see a refined third, fourth pitch, which you would ideally want to see from a major league starter, even if he is a rookie, as Sanchez was last year. But once he came back from his lat injury and was transitioned to the bullpen, we really saw that same dominant type force that we saw in 2014 when he debuted. He was very effective. He pitched in all kinds of playoff games for the Blue Jays and would affect playoffs as well. And I think that that's a role that the Blue Jays know he can succeed in. If they need to put him in that role going forward, he can be a very good relief pitcher for them. He can generate ground balls. He's not going to be a guy who gets all kinds of swings and misses, but he at least can cut down on the walks as a reliever, challenge hitters, and overpower them, especially when they're hitting from the right side.
Yeah, it surprised me a little bit. I followed him as a prospect, and with his stuff, with how good his arm is, and I've always thought he should be a starter because of that. But he, like you said, he has had problems with command, and at the end of the day, really, you have to have at least have serviceable command to be a major league starter. So it doesn't matter how good your stuff is. If you can't command the ball, you can't be a starter. Dellin Patances for the Yankees is a perfect example of that. I mean, nobody would argue about his stuff, but he just couldn't command it as a starter. So his future as a reliever, that, I guess that's one question that we will get to in a minute when it comes to Sanchez. I'm surprised he didn't strike out more guys in the minor leagues because of that. Again, even though there's command, there are lots of guys with bad command. Alex Reyes in St. Louis is another example where he has no clue where the ball was, but he strikes out everybody. I was a little surprised looking at his minor league numbers that he didn't strike out more batters.
Yeah, I think that you're probably not alone in being surprised because the ball stinks a lot and he's throwing hard. And especially in the minor leagues, you're not necessarily facing hitters with an advanced approach. So I would have guessed as well that he probably would have struck out more hitters, but he does generate so many ground balls that you're able to take advantage of that, especially now that the Blue Jays have Troy Tulowitzki playing shortstop. Ryan Goins is going to open the season as their everyday second baseman, and that combination should be able to save him a lot of runs on defense.
And when you're looking at a team, one of the ways that you can look at how they're going to succeed in 2016, we'll look into them ahead a little bit, is there are two ways to look at a team, I think. It's one, who's going to regress, who can maintain, and who's actually going to improve. And I don't want to be too much of a smoocher here, so let's look a little bit at the negative. We've been pretty positive about the guys up until this point. If you're going to look at the disappointments from 2015, who fits that bill for you from the Jays?
I didn't see a lot of disappointing years from the Blue Jays. Of course, Marcus Stroman was disappointed to miss most of the season with the torn ACL, so he would certainly fit that description. Devin Travis, who missed so much time with a shoulder injury, had a disappointing second half to the season. Justin Smoke had his ups and downs, but he ended up hitting 18 home runs. So I think that probably true of a lot of teams that defy expectations and go on to surpass what anyone predicted for them. But the Blue Jays really were a team that had a whole lot more positive surprises than negative surprises.
And going into the season, a couple of the rookies, Daniel Norris, who's no longer a Blue Jay, and Dalton Pompey were going to be, I thought, interesting potential contributors. Would Dalton Pompey possibly, because I also want to lead into their offseason, and they recently traded Ben Revere. I'm wondering, was Dalton Pompey a significant disappointment in 2015? Was he a disappointment at all? And then we'll move into what they did this offseason, and maybe the trade of Revere opened that door wide open for maybe a Pompey to maybe have a better season.
Right, and you mentioning Norris and Pompey definitely reminds me of those guys. It's funny, you almost don't even think of them as major pieces on the 2015 team, but absolutely, coming out of spring training, they were expected to be a member of the starting rotation, and in Pompey's case, he was expected to be the center fielder. So compared to those expectations, I would say that they probably did disappoint. Norris, like Sanchez, had trouble commanding the ball at the big league level, even though he did show flashes. One game at Tampa in particular, he was very dominant, but like a lot of young pitchers, he didn't put it together for an extended stretch. And Pompey as well. He came up again at the end of the year, but overall, his batting line was far from impressive, and he had to go all the way back down to Double-A at one point. So I think you could say that both of those guys are disappointments relative to what the Blue Jays were hoping for coming out of spring training. And one other name I would throw into that group would be Michael Saunders, whose season was lost to injury, and that was absolutely a disappointing season for the Blue Jays.
And one of the concerns I had going into the season last year was how youthful that bullpen was going to be. Having Castro and Osuna in the major leagues at such a young age is one thing, but the fact that they really didn't throw that many innings in the minor leagues up to that point, and Osuna coming off of Tommy John surgery, I thought that was could be a major concern and maybe even a health concern. I mean, a guy coming off of Tommy John surgery, I don't believe Osuna had thrown even 50 innings in a season or more than 75 in a season. Again, I could be wrong with that, but something in that neighborhood, for him to be expected to be a reliever the entire season, I thought that would be a problem going into last year. Now, Castro did not turn out to be productive, and he got sent down, but Osuna was phenomenal. What about those two guys going into the year, and specifically what you saw about Osuna? You have to be extremely impressed with the kind of year he had.
Yeah, he's a very impressive pitcher, and you're right. He hadn't pitched more than, I think it was 43, 44 innings before 2015. And he had a lot of experience. He had pitched in Mexico professionally as a teenager. So he wasn't going to be fazed by the big city, by major leagues and everything that goes along with it. And he showed that right off the bat when he struck out Alex Rodriguez in his first major league game. So I really think that Asuna started strong and he was able to build on that. And he was a vital part of that Blue Jays bullpen last year. I think that anytime you have a reliever who pitched close to 70 innings in the regular season, and they kept going to him in the postseason as well, he was their most relied upon guy and really pitched multiple innings a lot. You mentioned Dellin Betances before, and Asuna was quite on that level, of course, but he was able to pitch multiple innings a lot of times, and he was able to be very effective for the Blue Jays at a time that they were short on quality relief pitching.
And can Asuna put together that kind of season again this season? I want to get right into the off season, and probably one of the key additions is you add J.A. Happ, and of course he's not going to replace David Price from a quality standpoint, but he may replace the innings. You also added, I believe, J.C. Chavez, and you added Drew Storen. Am I missing anyone there in those three? What are your thoughts on those additions? And I think Storen being the key piece, because obviously bullpen's becoming more and more important, and now you've added a really good piece there. And I'm wondering, what do you think of these three moves? What is their role? What were the Jays thinking when they went out and made these adjustments? And if I forgot somebody, feel free to toss those guys in there as well.
Yeah, the only other major addition would be a guy who was on the Blue Jays last year, and that's Marco Estrada, who they re-signed for 2 years. So exactly, those are the additions that we're talking about here. Happ, Chavez, Storen, those are the big ones. And I think what the Blue Jays needed to accomplish going into this offseason was adding some pitching, and that meant both in the rotation and in the bullpen. And they went about adding to the rotation almost right away. They signed Estrada, they signed Happ, and it was very clear from the beginning that David Price was not going to be returning to Toronto. So Happ, Estrada, Chavez, these guys are not particularly exciting. They have never pitched more than 185 innings in a season, let alone 200. They don't have the upside that David Price has, or even close. So they are downgrading from David Price, but that's the downside here that we're talking about. If you want to look at it more positively, you could say that compared to this time last year, the Blue Jays have just as much starting pitching depth, if not more. So they definitely have some bodies, and they're going to have a competition for that number five spot, including Drew Hutchison, Jesse Chavez, probably Aaron Sanchez will be in that group competing for a rotation spot as well. You're starting to look at a rotation that looks okay, if not particularly good. And Storen, I think, is a really big piece for this team because after losing Mark Lowe and trading away Liam Hendricks, they were pretty short on right-handed relief, especially if they wanted to move Aaron Sanchez to the starting rotation. They just were not going to have a whole lot of options when it came to getting out late in games with right-handed relievers. And Storen is very good. I think that even though he struggled down the stretch in 2015, Storen is going to be a very useful piece for this bullpen, and you can make the strong case that he should be the closer, and that would free up Roberto Osuna to potentially pitch multiple innings and be a real fireman-type reliever along the lines of Dellin Betances.
That's a perfect segue into predicting 2016. We're talking Toronto Blue Jays here with Ben Nicholson-Smith from sportsnet.ca. If you want to follow him on Twitter, you can do that at bnicholsonsmith. I highly recommend that you do. He's a man with a plan when it comes to the Toronto Blue Jays. And looking ahead at 2016, I guess since you mentioned it, let's get the bullpen out of the way first. Asuna has the stuff to close, obviously. Filthy, filthy good stuff when it comes to closing. But Storen has the experience, and like you said, maybe he is the better ninth inning guy. Do we know yet who is going to be the guy? And if we don't, what are your thoughts on what you think it'll turn out to be starting on opening day?
It's always so tough to predict exactly how teams are going to construct their bullpens. On the one hand, I think that John Gibbons might veer toward keeping Asuna in that role, in large part because managers like to be loyal to the players that succeed under them, and Asuna was really good last year. So that's the one argument for keeping Asuna there, is it's his job until he loses it, and certainly he hasn't done anything on the field to warrant losing that job. So then you look at the case for Storen, and I think the case there is that Storen really has been a one-inning pitcher in the course of the last couple of seasons in Washington. He hasn't pitched more than one inning in an outing since 2013. So if you want to use Storen as that ninth-inning guy who gets the saves and who is going to be in that traditional closer's role, then that would free up Roberto Osuna, and he could come in the seventh and the eighth. He could come in extra innings. He could pick up saves as well if necessary, but it would free him up. So I think you could go either way. The Blue Jays haven't announced anything yet, but I'm not really holding my breath on this one because I think that it might play out into spring training as the Blue Jays contemplate whether they might even want to stretch Roberto Osuna out in spring training.
And it's pretty incredible how many teams have good bullpens. I mean, the Red Sox added Carson Smith and Craig Kimbrell. The Yankees, who didn't need anybody, still did and upgraded. They got rid of a Wilson, but they added Chapman. That's not actually that much of an improvement, but it is. Whenever you add Chapman, you improve. So across the board, it looks like bullpen is a loaded position for a lot of teams. We're not even talking about some of those other really quality bullpens like the Kansas City Royals, for example. But the Jays as well, it looks like they're pretty good. I mean, we're talking about who's going to close, but the fact is not only do those two guys both be able to close, can do the job if you need to, but you've got other good bullpen guys as well that aren't going to close but can do the seventh and eighth innings if you need them to.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why adding Storen was big for this team. Now they have the pieces, and they have to figure out how they're going to use those pieces, how they're going to arrange those different players. They have them on the roster now. So that's a big difference compared to a month or two ago when it was very clear that the Blue Jays wanted and needed to add another relief pitcher, if not more. So I think especially in this context of really stacked bullpens, and you're seeing, like you said, teams like the Yankees and Red Sox going out and adding relief pitching aggressively, I really think that the definition of what it means to have a really good major league bullpen has changed, and it's constantly changing as teams change the way that they use relief pitchers. So right now, the group that the Blue Jays have in their bullpen probably would have dominated 20 years ago, but right now it's probably an average bullpen, and that's not a slight to the guys they have. It's just a reflection of the fact that around Major League Baseball, there are so many teams that are really stacked 4 and 5 deep in their bullpens.
Yeah, and the American League East, from top to bottom, may be the best. I mean, the Orioles' bullpen is, they re-signed Darren O'Day. They still have Zach Britton as their closer. The AL East is loaded in the bullpen, and the Jays are at least competitive when it comes to that. Let's look forward ahead to the rotation a little bit here. Let's start off with Marco Estrada, because I think Stroman's probably the key, and Jay Happ is the addition. But for Estrada to have the kind of season that he did last year, pretty remarkable. I don't know if people realize just how good he was last season. Give us a little thoughts on him, and can he do it again? I know you extended him, so of course the Jays like him. But for him to do that well, it's asking a lot to think that he can do it again. But nonetheless, maybe he can. What do you think?
I don't think he can do it again, and I think that's because he set the bar so high for himself. So he went out and posted an ERA of 3.13 last year. He got Cy Young votes. Historically, that hasn't been who he is. And it's pretty rare for any pitcher to put up those kinds of numbers. So I don't think that Blue Jays fans or Major League Baseball fans should be expecting Marco Estrada to repeat the extraordinary success that he had in 2015. But at the same time, I do think that he's a useful major league starter who can continue to succeed against big league hitters. You look at what he did last year, and he did a really nice job of pitching up in the zone, even though he's not an overpowering guy. That would set up his changeup, which is a Bugs Bunny changeup, really devastating pitch that gets a lot of swings and misses. And even when batters, they were making weak contact, you saw a lot of pop-ups and shallow fly balls. Those are extremely easy to catch. It doesn't put a lot of stress on the defense. And as a result, he was able to put together a really strong season. But I do think more success is coming from Marco Estrada. I just don't think that it's realistic to think he can get away with no regression after a season that was so dominant.
Right. And what's interesting, and when I look at teams like that, I say, okay, the Blue Jays had 93 wins. Why did they do that? And you look at, and we broke it down what they were able to do. But if you're going to look at how they either maintain, emerge and do better, or regress, you got to look at these players and see who's going to regress. I think I agree with you. A 1.04 whip from Estrada as a high ball pitcher in a home run friendly park, it would shock me if he didn't have. I mean, he could have a horrible season, to be honest. I mean, I don't want to be a doom and gloom type here, but it wouldn't shock me if he went from a 1.04 whip to a 1.4 whip and an ERA of 3.13 to a 4.5. I mean, it wouldn't stun me. And he is one of the intriguing guys, and this rotation really needs everybody that they can. The next guy I want to ask you about is J.A. Happ. he's kind of proved me wrong time and time again. I've never thought he could make it in the major leagues, yet he was at least a serviceable guy in Philadelphia a few years back. Everybody who pitches in Pittsburgh seems to succeed. The pitching coaches there, I don't know what they're throwing in their water or dusting with their food with, but somehow guys go there and they're just phenomenal. And Jay Happ is another example of a pitch great in Pittsburgh, but he's a lefty, and his stuff isn't filthy. He's coming to back to the American League, the designated hitter, the AL East, which looks like it's getting better, and he's pitching in a hitter-friendly park. What do you think Jay Happ can be in Toronto? And for them to get to 93 wins again, what do you actually need from Happ? He doesn't need to win the Cy Young for you guys to still be competitive, but what does he need to be for you guys to get to that 88 to 93 win plateau to be a possible wild card?
I think Happ has to be who he has been throughout his career. And to me, that's a number three, number four starter. Maybe in a rough year, he might even look like more of a number five. Certainly, down the stretch for the Pirates, he pitched like an eighth. But I don't think that you're going to expect that from anyone, especially not a guy who has really established a baseline of production at the big league level. And that baseline has continued to add velocity remarkably as he's progressed through the major league and as he's aged. So I think that there's a lot to like about Jay Happ, and certainly the work that he had with Ray Searidge in Pittsburgh and the strides that he made there, those have to be encouraging for the Blue Jays. But I think what you can probably realistically expect from Happ is something like 175 innings with an ERA that's maybe a little bit below four.
And that's serviceable. And again, we love to look at the aces like the David Price. Everyone wants two aces. You know, we all get greedy out there and say, all right, I want at least two aces so that when you go into the playoffs, they can win you that four-game series, each of them winning two each. And so we just want these aces up and down the rotation. And you look and say, people are complaining about the Dodgers because they don't have three aces. You know, it's like they didn't sign Greinke, so they're screwed. And yet they have Clayton Kershaw. So maybe we expect too much. And that's what's interesting about the Jays is they probably lack an ace now, but maybe not. Let me ask you about Marcus Stroman. How many innings does he throw coming back? It's not like he has an elbow injury. We have to be cautious with him. But he didn't throw last season. And there is a workload thing where you don't want to go from 100 innings to 200. There's that kind of acceleration. Some, it seems like, is an issue in baseball. What are you expecting from a workload perspective from Stroman? And as far as quality goes, what do you think you might get from him in 2016?
I think from a quality standpoint, he is chance to be very good, and he's a very, very ambitious guy. He wants to be the ace who replaces David Price. That's a lot to ask of someone who has made, I think, 24 major league starts. So I'm not expecting that from him, but he showed the ability to pitch like a number two starter. He's got a wide array of pitches. He's around the strike zone, commands the ball well, and definitely has swing and miss stuff despite a 5'8" frame. So from the quality standpoint, I think he can deliver. Now, as for the question of how many innings he can pitch, you're right. Definitely is a bit of an unknown for the Blue Jays. And coming off a season where he only made a handful of regular season starts, followed by a couple playoff starts, it's tough to peg an innings limit or an innings threshold on him. But if I had to guess, I would say that the Blue Jays probably aren't going to put that many restrictions on him. Of course, they're going to keep an eye on him. He's a controllable pitcher, someone who's a big part of their future, and they're not going to want to let him overextend either his knee or his arm. But I'm not expecting them to put an innings cap. I think if he ends up pitching 215 innings, then I think they'd be okay with that.
Yeah, and it's not like he's coming back from an elbow or a shoulder where you really do need to be cautious. It's just the fact that he hasn't pitched, and that could actually be a benefit. He could possibly throw more because he didn't pitch so many last year. So it seems like a relevant question, but I don't expect it to be an issue either. Again, elbows and shoulders, you have to be cautious. Looking at the bottom of the rotation, I would have to assume Stroman is your number one. Estrada and Happ, two and three, somewhere in that mix, depending on which place you would probably want to put Estrada to. But looking at four through six or seven, R.A. Dickey, Jesse Chavez, Drew Hutchinson, and then we got that Aaron Sanchez kid again. Who is going to be four and five, and what do you think of Aaron Sanchez? Are they going to start him in the rotation, or is this a position battle? Is this a spring training situation where we'll know more when that ends rather than even trying to guess now?
Well, R.A. Dickey will firmly be within that group of top four starters. So he'll be in there with Happ, Estrada, and Stroman in some order. And I think you're right in saying that Stroman is the leading candidate to get that opening day nod. And then as for the number five spot, you're really looking at those three pitchers you mentioned. Hutchison is going to be in that mix. Of course, you're going to look at Jesse Chavez, and then Aaron Sanchez is someone in there as well. We can't rule out Roberto Osuna, but I'm not sure that they'd be comfortable boosting his innings so considerably after he only pitched 78 innings last year, and that's including the postseason. So when you're looking at that group of three starters, I think the Blue Jays would be thrilled if Drew Hutchison could go out there and recapture some of the form that we saw from him in 2014. But given that he struggled so much last year, ERA over 5.5, I'm not sure that we can assume that Drew Hutchison is going to show the kind of sharpness the Blue Jays are hoping for, which would leave Sanchez and Jesse Chavez. Now, if Jesse Chavez is in the bullpen to open the season, I think the Blue Jays would be just fine with that. Every team needs a long man. Every team is going to have to go through probably 10 starters in the course of the season. Chavez will make starts for the Blue Jays. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But if he can start the season in the bullpen, I think they'd be okay with that as a way to ease his workload. You don't want to overexpose him. He's a very slight guy. I don't think that you're going to expect a 200-inning season from him by any stretch. Starting him off in the bullpen could help accomplish that. And Sanchez, to me, is a bit more of a wild card. You have to take a look at stretching him out, in my opinion, just because you never know if he can develop a secondary pitch, if his command can improve a little bit. Those are things that you can see if you do stretch him out. And there are so many innings to go around in spring training to begin with. So you're going to need to stretch a bunch of guys out, see what sticks, see who's injured, keep your options open, and then make a decision at some point in March.
And the one thing that you can look at in a positive light is if you did stretch him out, and then all of a sudden you've got seven starters for five spots. And like you said, it's always good to have a guy who struggles. You can move him back and move someone in. If someone gets injured, which always happens, then you've got seven for five. I mean, that really does give you some depth. Now let me get into the quality issue, which is Marcus Stroman has the potential to be number one, but he's a small guy. He doesn't have a lot of history yet. He's still a very young pitcher. You'd love to slot him number two and have that true ace at the top, which, of course, everyone would love to do that, and very few teams actually have it. They were 12th in ERA last season, and David Price did contribute to that, but he didn't contribute 200 innings to that. So it's not like that ERA is entirely, you know, buoyed by David Price. Can this rotation, with Stroman there for an entire season and with seven guys where none of them really, if you look at them, they're probably a bunch of threes. Estrada obviously pitched like a two or even a one last year, and Stroman has a potential to be a number one. But you look at these seven guys, what are you expecting from them? Can they get somewhere in the 12 to 15 range as far as rankings go in ERA? And is this rotation, do you think, going to be able to get them up to 90 to 93 wins so that they can win the AL East again, or at the very least be a wildcard contender? Is the staff good enough where the offense will carry you to that, obviously, the hope of making the postseason?
The short answer is yes, but I'll expand on that a little by saying that last year, if you want to take the really optimistic view, last year, David Price and Marcus Stroman combined to make 15 regular season starts for the Blue Jays, 15. And you could conceivably see Stroman make 30. And if that's the case, you're going to get that frontline type of arm contributing for more than 15 games. Now, realistically, in my opinion, this is a below average starting rotation. And I think that if they reach the playoffs, it's not going to be because of their rotation. But what I would say is that this rotation is good enough to get them to where they need to go, because the other elements of this team, the defense, the offense, of course, even a recently improved bullpen, I think those other elements add up to the point that this overall unit is very strong. And I don't think the rotation is going to stop them from getting there, even if it's not going to be the primary reason that they do enter the 2016 season as contenders.
And I think one thing that we found over the last couple seasons is you just need to stay competitive. You need to keep your team in games. And that was one of the problems with the Red Sox. I look at this rotation for the Jays this year, and you look at what the Red Sox came into in 2015 with. It's a bunch of decent guys to good guys, but mediocre. The Red Sox just weren't able to stay competitive. They had just a lot of games where they were losing by five or six runs early in the game, and you just can't compete that way. If you can somehow manage to stay in games for the first half or so of the season, then you can go out and make a trade for a veteran who can make an impact like you did with David Price. Well, you don't have to sign a $200 million contract. Maybe you get a $170 million guy for, like you said, 10 or 15 starts, and all of a sudden you go from competitive you add that piece, and all of a sudden you're in the playoffs again. The Jays could do that again, and with the way you they've been able to develop their system and the prospects that they've been able to develop, they seem to be in the ballpark to be able to do that again. So that's key. I'm wondering if they can do that. Stroman is definitely a high-end guy. I guess it'll depend on Estrada's regression. How big of a deal is that? And then Jay Happ, can he at least hold his own as a left-hander in the AL East? So we'll see about that. Let's transition to the offense now, which was just a monster unit last year. All those home runs, 41 from Donaldson, 40, I mean, two 40 home run guys. I don't think there were even 10 40 home run players in all of baseball. And the Jays had two of them with Encarnacion at 39. So he was just a whisper away from getting 40 as well. Three 40 home run guys. That's a phenomenal. Then you had Martin with 23, Smoke with 18, Colabello with 15, and even Kevin Pillar at 12. As you said, a guy who's known for his defense still hit 12 homers, along with stealing 25 bases. When do these guys start regressing? Bautista and Encarnacion are getting up there in age. When do these guys start striking out a lot more and hitting less of these balls out of the park?
Well, it could happen as soon as this year. I mean, they've set the bar so high that it certainly wouldn't be a surprise if their numbers fall off compared to where they were in 2015. I mean, these guys have been so productive for the last 4 or 5 years, in Donaldson's case for the last 3 years. Donaldson, I think, at age 30 should be a very productive player, at least for a few more years. I don't see any reason to expect a precipitous decline from him. But when you look at Bautista and Encarnacion, Bautista at 35, Encarnacion at 33, at some point, whether it's in the next few years, in the next 5 years, at some point they're going to decline. They're not going to stay at this level forever. And what the Blue Jays have to determine, not so much for 2016, because they're under contract at a very reasonable rate, and I think they're going to be very productive players this year, but what they have to determine in a big picture sense is whether these players are worth extending, because right now they're entering their final years of their contracts.
And if you had to pick, and this is probably a question for 2017, but if you had to predict which one of these they would keep and which one of them maybe they could afford, of the Bautista and Encarnacion, is there a preference there?
I don't think there is a preference. And I think it's interesting. There's often an assumption that it'll be one and not the other, and that it's an either or. I don't think it is an either or. I think it could be both. I think it could be neither. And I think that really these players are so close to free agency that to expect them to give the Blue Jays a significant hometown discount seems to me unrealistic.
Yeah, expecting that from any player these days is probably. But again, with the way the outfield market has developed this offseason, Alex Gordon took a discount, so it could happen. But I agree. To assume or expect these kinds of things, it's difficult to really predict that, and you should definitely not be assuming that. Let me ask you about one of the bigger moves, and this is intriguing because this is a very controversial move. You traded Jose Reyes for Tulowitzki, and I don't think anyone would argue that that was not an upgrade, especially since Reyes can't stay on the field for the most part. But Tulowitzki, playing all of his career in Coors, he's a guy who can't exactly stay on the field either, so it is intriguing that two guys playing the same position have the same kind of issue. What did you see from Tulowitzki in 2015? Rogers Center is a very hitter-friendly park, but it isn't Coors Field. Nothing is Coors Field. I mean, let's face it. It's like playing on Earth versus playing on the moon, and I don't think the Rockies will ever compete because of that. But what did you see from Tulowitzki last year, and what kind of expectations, and with that turf, how are the Jays going to handle him in 2016?
I think as far as handling him, they just hope he stays healthy, provide him with all the training and medical support that he needs, and essentially cross your fingers. I mean, he's going to be the everyday guy. And as for what I saw last year, I was impressed. I didn't realize how good of a defender he was. And he was very skilled defensively, great positioning, great instinct, very good throwing arm. And I thought that added up to a strong defensive effort. But at the plate, he was worse than I expected. And I think that that's pretty much in line with what Tulowitzki would say. He battled an injury after cracking a shoulder blade. Never really found an offensive rhythm with this team, although he did get a couple of big hits in the playoffs. Over the course of that body of work, that regular season 2 months when he was in Toronto, it really didn't click for him offensively. And now heading into 2016, he's going to look to put that behind him and see if he can recapture at least a big percentage of that form that he put together for so many years in Colorado.
Yeah, offensively, I think you got to expect a little bit less than his best seasons just because of the change in the park. The one thing would be, I agree, I think him coming back from hip surgery, I think a lot of people just wrote that off. Someone has an injury last season, and they assume, or they have an off-season surgery, they just assume, or they just ignore it. I don't think people quite factored in how big of a deal a hip surgery is. I mean, we talk about A-Rod was never the same after his hip surgery. I'm not saying that the Tula Whitney surgery was the exact same, but when a guy has a major surgery on a hip, you should expect some kind of regression or some kind of impact. So I would expect him to be better this year just because of that. But with Tula Whitney, you can never expect or assume him to be healthy. So I do wonder about that. Looking at this, the Jays were phenomenal offensively. Like you said, I believe they led baseball in runs scored. I'll double check that real quickly here. Let me look at the. I'm just pulling them up here. Yes, not
they
only
did by a wide margin.
By a wide margin, almost 130 runs over the second place New York Yankees of all teams. So 891 runs, 232 home runs, which actually wasn't all that much higher than the Houston Astros, and actually only 20 home runs more than the Yankees. So while they hit more home runs than everybody, the runs were just ridiculous. Is it even possible for them to score 891 runs again? What kind of expectation? Do you think the offense on the whole will be the same? Will there be a little bit of regression? Could they even improve? What are you expecting offensively on the whole from the club?
It's certainly possible for them to replicate those numbers, but I also think it's unlikely. When you look at this lineup, they're as good as it gets in Major League Baseball, and I would expect them to be among the top three, four, five offensive teams in baseball again this year, but they hit a lot go right for them last year, and I think that we need to remember that when we're looking ahead to this season, trying to anticipate what's going to happen. I mean, when you look at Bautista, Donaldson, and Encarnacion combining for 120 home runs, that's a huge amount of offense. When you look at Russell Martin putting together a very good offensive season, breakout players like Pilar, who hit close to 30 doubles, and Chris Colabello, Justin Smoke, I mean, up and down the lineup, even Danny Valencia for the time that he was there, Devin Travis for the time that he played, you just saw so many different offensive contributors and so many guys who had not just good seasons but great offensive seasons. But to expect that again, I think is unrealistic. So I wouldn't count on 891 runs, but I would expect this team to essentially be an offensive juggernaut again because that's what they're built around. And when you look at the names in that lineup, they're still a very talented group.
Yeah, I mean, Colabello was only a part-time contributor, but to get that kind of part-time contribution from a guy who really hasn't been much of anything, 15 home runs in 101 games, a 321 batting average, 367. My assumption is he did a lot of that against left-handed pitching, but again, I'm assuming. But still, that, I mean, for a guy who you didn't even know what you were going to get, 15 home runs and then 12 from Pilar, that to me is a that's phenomenal complementary pieces that most teams don't get. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. Looking at it up and down the lineup, it looks like a lot of the positions are pretty steady. Devin Travis, I'm assuming, is your full-time second baseman. You've got Saunders, Pompey, and Pilar in the outfield. Those are three guys, probably at least for now, looks like they're fighting for two spots. You've also got Junior Lake in there. What is your outfield going to look like, you think, on a regular basis, and how much of a timeshare might there be? How is it going to unfold in that outfield?
First of all, on Devin Travis, he's still coming back from a shoulder operation, so he'll miss the start of the season with Ryan Goins starting at second. And in the outfield, I think that it's going to be Pilar in center field. He's not going to have to battle for a position. That'll be his job. And I think as long as Michael Saunders is healthy, he'll have the everyday job in left field as well, with Dalton Pompey, of course, there to fill in should there be an injury, or if the Blue Jays just want to rotate him in, he's definitely capable of providing some defensive value and stealing some bases as well.
And prospects or young players? We talked about Pompey already. You could call him a prospect or maybe not. Are there any prospects or young players in the minor leagues that could play a role this year? Like I said, Norris and Pompey were supposed to last year and really didn't. Same goes for Castro, whereas Osuna was a major contributor. Any guys you see in your minors that could end up playing some kind of significant, impactful role for this team?
Blue Jays have some intriguing prospects, but I'm not seeing a lot of them in the upper minors. And so I wouldn't expect that their prospects are going to make a huge impact on the 2016 season, particularly when it comes to the early part of the year. So maybe that changes later on. But as of right now, after trading so many young pitchers away to acquire the reinforcements they needed at the 2015 trade deadline, they don't have a huge amount of depth in terms of prospects. And so when it comes to predicting guys that are going to have an impact on the big league team, I'm not seeing a lot of that, to be honest with you.
And we already talked a little bit about regression. If you had to pick one guy who's probably the best regression candidate, I think the way you talked, it's probably Marco Estrada. But if there's somebody out there, by all means, feel free to throw that out there. Who's a guy that could be a breakout guy? I mean, so many players had such good seasons last year. There's not a lot of choices, but nonetheless, I wanted you to find one. If someone was to have a breakout year for this club, who do you think it might be?
You could point to a guy like Pompey if he gets the opportunity. I think that he has the prospect pedigree. He definitely has the skills. And so I would highlight him as a guy to watch. But, of course, you need to get that opportunity first, and that might not come along if Michael Saunders is healthy. So I think Pompey is a guy to watch as someone who's young, someone who hasn't broken out yet, and definitely has the potential to be an impact big league player.
The one thing I'm curious about is I've never seen Kevin Pillar as a full-time player. Defensively, he's great, and for him to hit 12 homers last year and steal 25 bases, I mean, that is a full-time player. I've never thought Pillar was a full-time player type of guy. Saunders has been a full-time guy, but he's not a guy that it seems like, oh, yes, we're definitely going with Saunders. He's a star. You know, he's an absolute untouchable. If Pompey does have a really good spring, that could make for a tough decision. If he really breaks out and shows the kind of potential that a lot of people thought he might have been able to do in 2015, could he make things a lot more difficult and we could be changing our tune maybe, you know, 12 weeks from now?
With respect to Pillar, no. With respect to Saunders, I think that it mostly hinges on Saunders' health, but you make an interesting point, and I do wonder if Pompey were to go out there and really tear it up in spring training and show all kinds of potential offensively, on the bases, defensively, it could make for a tough decision for the Blue Jays. And you never know. I mean, with Saunders not necessarily having had the greatest track record against left-handed pitching, there's a possibility that they would try to work Pompey in there regularly. I think still the smart money is on Saunders being that everyday guy if he is healthy, but you never know. And that's the beauty of spring training, is so much, I'm sure, in the next 2 months is probably going to change beyond what we would have even expected, and that's before we even get to opening day.
Yep, and now let's wrap it up. We got two more questions. One is prediction time. What's their record for 2016?
If I had to guess right now, I'd say something along the lines of 90-72, right in that conversation for a wild card.
And the most important question of the day, this is titled A Podcast to Be Named Later, and I like to give the guest every opportunity to name the show. If you're going to rename this show, what is the name for a podcast to be named later?
Wow. You know what? I actually think you guys have a great name right now. I think Podcast to Be Named Later is pretty good. So I wouldn't want to mess with it. I think you guys have a good one. PTBNL, I think it's got a good ring to it.
We like to hear that, whether it's honest and sincere or you're just brown-nosing. Either way, we love it. Ben Nicholson-Smith from sportsnet.ca, the man that knows everything about Toronto Blue Jays. Thanks a lot for coming on today. We appreciate you taking the time. 47 minutes of Blue Jays talk. Not a bad way to spend a day. We got snow on the ground here. Thanks a lot for coming on today, Ben.
Thanks, Chris. My pleasure.
All right. Again, that's Ben Nicholson-Smith. You can always follow him on Twitter, @ Ben Nicholson. Let me get his Twitter handle exactly here. @ B Nicholson Smith. Ben Nicholson Smith covers the Toronto Blue Jays for sportsnet.ca. I recommend you follow him. The Jays are a fascinating team. Lots of talent, lots of potential in that organization. And the AL East is going to be exciting. There's a lot going on up there in Toronto. And I think there may be more regression in some of those players. Because again, three guys who hit either 39 home runs or more. You have to think somebody is not going to do that again, but who knows? I mean, those guys have been consistent. Donaldson has established himself as a star. Bautista has been good for quite some time, and Encarnacion has as well. So for them to do it again would not be a stunner. But three players to almost hit 40 home runs, that to me seems almost impossible to believe. The rotation, like we talked about, easily the issue there. They need to be able to maintain that. They need to at least be league average. And I don't know if they can or not. We were very nice to that rotation, talking about the potential, but there is some chance there for that to really be a position of weakness. And we saw it with the Red Sox last season. Maybe the Jays are this season. Someone has to not be as good or be better in that AL East. And the Jays being at the top, there's definitely room for someone. They have to fall. Someone has to fall. That's the case here. But again, thank you to Ben Nicholson Smith for joining us today. Follow him on Twitter at @BNicholsonSmith. That's our Toronto Blue Jays podcast today for the wraparound. Again, at @BNicholsonSmith. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at @CJMitch73. This is a podcast to be named later. We're going to be talking tomorrow, Boston Red Sox, with Sean McAdam from Comcast SportsNet up here in Boston. Knows everything Red Sox related. Great all-around league guy, but he covers the Red Sox specifically locally. So we're going to be talking with him tomorrow afternoon at noon. We're talking noontime on Thursday with Sean McAdam from Comcast SportsNet. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Head on over to minorleagueball.com for all of my baseball writing, as well as finding the links for these podcasts, which are all airing over there. I love talking baseball. We're going to go all around the league, division by division, team by team, right up until opening day. We've got the Orioles and the Jays in the books. Tomorrow we're going to be talking Red Sox. Next week we'll be talking Yankees and Rays. Excited to be talking baseball here in wintertime, and we'll be back tomorrow. Again, join us tomorrow, noontime, with Sean McAdam talking Boston Red Sox.